time by saying thank you to Stefan, who chairs the session, and for putting me in this nice time slot, which was called Penrose slot by Freddy to us. So I'm going to introduce a new representation which we recently defined. And for that, I should explain a bit what is actually the standard representation for loop quantum gravity, and that's known as Arshtika-Lewandowski representation. And it's around since a certain time. And to explain how it works, I just go over this question, what is actually a vacuum, which is not very easy to answer in general relativity because we have constraints and we don't really know what energy is in closed systems. Eh? So you can make some excuses and say vacuum, also since it is in general lowest energy, it actually happens to be the most typical state or the simplest state to prepare. That's what you would like. And sometimes, since we are theoreticians, it's basically the easiest state to write down. That also happens. then we would have, you know, addition to a vacuum, you would need excitations. So that's other states we can prepare with some minimal effort, like building an LHC and so on. however, notion of your vacuum, of a good vacuum, of course, depends on the situation and the dynamics. And you know, very known examples are condensate states where you can have a scalar field which with non-vanishing expectation values, which you can actually accommodate by even changing the representation or changing the Hilbert space. And so that will be also happening here. and so let me just explain you how Fock vacuum and Fock space works, because that will be basically how all the other vacua also in loop quantum gravity work. So the vacuum state, typically we can write it as something with nothing in it. So it's vacuum, empty. Of course, it's, you know, we know, we always write this shorthand notation, but in truth, it's a very complicated object if you use the standard vacuum, because for instance, it satisfies the Rey-Schlieder theorem, which tells you it's, for instance, a very non-local state. And you can define it a bit more abstractly. And one of these basic things is that you want to have it invariant under the basic symmetries of your theory. So in this case, the Poincaré group. Then you have excitations, which we typically describe as particle state created by creation operators. And so you could say, OK, I have something like a discrete basis, Fock states. It's not really discrete. And these come as labeled. These are labeled by momenta. And they tell you of how many particles I have with a given momentum. So the main point is that the vacuum is cyclic, which just means that given an observable algebra, you can generate the full Fock space by applying your operator algebra to this vacuum. That's a very convenient property to have. And on the other hand, a Fock space really carries a representation of your observable algebra. And in this case, you can understand this observable algebra as your field operators or the creation and annihilation operators. And more abstractly, there's just this GNS construction, which is going on here. let me make some further remarks. So also, you have this discrete basis, these Fock states. Of course, these mean something very complicated. It means that they actually denote a state where you have finitely many excitations, but lots of these, infinitely many of these labels, nk, are actually zero. So you can kind of imagining that you have a Hilbert space which only gives you the excitations with a given momentum label, and that you embed these Hilbert spaces into each other. So in this case, it's not very well defined because you have a continuous momentum label, but this concept will be important later on. of course, this explicit embedding map, where here I write something very simple, is actually quite non-trivial and non-local, because each of these modes corresponds to something which is written in Fourier space and therefore quite non-local. OK, let me go on. and just give you a 5-second introduction to loop quantum gravity. So the loop quantum gravity Hilbert space works basically in the same way as the Fock space. So the only what you need to know is that we, in principle, have a phase space with a connection and flux variables. And from these, from this phase space, we build an operator algebra. And essential for the Arshtika-Lewandowski representations are holonomies, which you build from this connection. Holonomies means that you take this connection and smear them or integrate them over one-dimensional objects. So these holonomies will act as creation operators. And they create basically excitations in your Hilbert space. And you can do that with respect to arbitrary paths in your manifold. So what you get, if you do it a lot, you get a spin network based on a graph, which describes the excitation of your Hilbert space. And so the entire loop quantum gravity Hilbert space can be generated by applying lots of these holonomy operators. Then you have fluxes, which act as derivatives. And just to note that it's important that they act as derivatives. They give you something which is proportional to this spin label here, J, and all these excitations, all these holonomy operators are also labeled by a spin label. And if the spin label is zero, it means you you have a trivial holonomy operator, so it's in the trivial representation. It would give you also a zero flux. So as before, we have a cyclic vacuum state, and since the fluxes give you the spatial geometry, this is a state with no spatial geometry. So the holonomy operators act as creation operators, as I explained. They also act as annihilation operators. and you have a basis of excitations, which are labeled by graphs. And as before, you could also embed Hilbert spaces into each other, which are based on these graphs. And that's an important concept in loop quantum gravity. So basically, you can always embed any excitation you can understand as, you know, as a Hilbert space just based on this edge, which would be just carrying these excitations. However, to embed it into something in continuum, you basically can imagine that if you want to embed it on something which is labeled by a more complicated graph, you have to write j equal to zero on all additional edges you put there. And if you do that, you can imagine that you can go to the continuum Hilbert space. And more or less, that's the idea of how this continuum Hilbert space is defined in loop quantum gravity. so no edge is equivalent to having an edge with j equal to zero. And here, this j equal to zero is basically the same as the vacuum state. So this vacuum state is also essential to tell you how to refine on the seemingly discrete basis your state to a finer basis and embed it into a continuum Hilbert space. so there's one, you know, to make it more non, there's this important concept of cylindrical consistency, which is important here, and which is in this, it's something which just tells you that any computation or any observable should not depend on where you represent this observable. So it should give you the same result on this Hilbert space or this Hilbert space or this Hilbert space if it really just refers to basically something which is based on this edge. And these conditions are satisfied for the basic observables we have in our Hilbert space, namely the fluxes and the holonomies. And so for the Arshtika-Lewandowski representation, it's basically non-trivial in the holonomies. And that looks a bit complicated, but here the main idea is that this cylindrical consistency basically represents you the composition law for the holonomies. So that just means if you subdivide an edge, it gives you actually the composition law for the holonomy. Whereas for the fluxes, it's a bit more non-trivial, a bit more trivial condition in a sense, because it tells you if you measure a flux here on a non-subdivided edge, you get some result. If you measure the flux basically on the same edge, which now you have, however, decided to subdivide, the cylindrical consistency tells you that you should get the same flux, whether you measure it here or here. So this condition tells you that fluxes, which you measure basically along the same edge, should be constant. Whereas before, we had a composition law for the holonomies. This gives you the kinematical loop quantum gravity Hilbert space. And now the fact is that spatial geometry operators like area and volume are built from fluxes. And so that means that they vanish if there's no excitation, if there's no graph, because all these operators are basically derivative operators and proportional to J roughly. And so that if I don't have a graph here, I have zero volume. So all these states represent, you know, something very degenerate. And indeed, the vacuum is something where all these spatial geometries are exactly zero. All these operators are exactly zero. So in a sense, it's a totally squeezed state describing a totally degenerate geometry, which you can indeed say it's your fundamental vacuum in quantum gravity. But it's very hard to extract low energy physics. And so this gives you the summary again. We have this very squeezed state. We have these excitations. However, it's basically hard to build a state which describes you macroscopic geometries. And indeed, Tim Kozlowski took that as a reason to change the representation. And he got something which is not diffeomorphism invariant because he introduced basically a background triad. What I'm going to do is to define a dual vacuum, which is based on BF theory. And just let me tell you that this is different from just expressing BF amplitudes in this Hilbert space, which as far as I know, it cannot actually be done exactly in this Archica-Lewandowski Hilbert space. Okay. And there's basically really a question whether this can be done, because there's a celebrated theorem, which was telling you that this representation, Archica-Lewandowski, is unique. And it's a unique diffeomorphism invariant representation. So you would say no. And since I'm old, I have to skip all these interesting slides, which give you more references. So let me give you the main idea of this Hilbert space. So what happens is that we have to dualize everything, but again, it's the same principle. And the main point was that indeed you had to really dualize every ingredient. So we have now a cyclic vacuum state, which describes you a state with no curvature. So now we have a state where actually curvature is exactly zero, and all the spatial geometry operators have maximal uncertainty. So it's basically squeezed in the opposite direction. Instead of having the holonomies as generating user excitations, we have exponentiated fluxes, and apparently they're called Wilson surface operators, which generate excitations. And so these Wilson surface operators in 3+1, as the name suggests, they are based on surfaces. And indeed, for the entire setup, it's important to actually choose, instead of graphs, a triangulation. And then these Wilson surface operators are giving you something which basically sits on the faces of your triangulation. And so these generate excitations which will be labeled by group elements. So instead of a spin network, we now have a surface network sitting on a triangulation. And these surfaces are based on arbitrarily refined embedded triangulation. And because they can be arbitrarily refined, the same trick as in the Archica-Lewandowski representation allows you to define the continuum limit and the continuum Hilbert space. So here it gives you a bit more the setup, but the details are in the other slides here, which I cannot explain. So instead of graphs, we now have embedded triangulations. And indeed, these embeddings are basically important if you want to represent spatial diffeomorphisms. And we can write down spatial diffeomorphism generators, which move these vertices around. We have also defined the dual complex, because that's where the holonomies live. So far, we basically have a representation, and the difference to loop quantum to Arshtick-Lewandowski is that so far we represent only the gauge invariant operators, modulo gauge variants at the root, which you have to specify. The main point in defining this vacuum is again by defining the embeddings, which in Arshtick-Lewandowski was just given by I write j equal to zero on my additional edges. So now we have to think about refining operations for triangulation. These are given by so-called Alexander moves, which are just moves refining your triangulation. And we implement these refining Alexander moves. We embed them into finer triangulations by basically, you know, just gluing BF amplitudes to our given state. And gluing BF amplitudes is basically what one is very used in spin forms. So that's kind of very near to spin forms. And so this notion equips a set of triangulation with a partial directed order, which is just important to do the standard construction of taking the continuum limit. Then there's this important point again about cylindrical consistency conditions. And so in the Arshtick-Lewandowski embeddings, we had that the holonomies had to compose and the fluxes had to stay constant. Now we dualize everything. So here it will be opposite. So holonomies stay constant. And indeed, that just reflects the fact that we imposed f equal to zero, the curvature is equal to zero. So the refined holonomies will basically all represent f equal to zero. And the fluxes compose. So the fluxes, in 3 plus 1, are associated to surfaces. And the composition of fluxes in non-abelian theories is, unfortunately, I mean, that's part of the theory, more complicated than holonomies, because holonomies you can just multiply. So for the fluxes, you need to specify more things to specify how you actually glue them together along a surface, because you have all to parallel transport them in some way. And you have to actually to basically say you have to specify a tree on the surface to tell you how to glue these things together. However, it turns out that all these details actually do not matter for the quantum theory, because the flatness of our embeddings ensures that all these choices give you the same result. And indeed, the fluxes are basically satisfy this composition law and are cylindrically consistent with respect to this new notion of cylindrical consistency. okay, so that. As before, this condition basically allows you to define the continuum Hilbert space, which is something formal. And so let me just explain here, how did we evade actually this lost uniqueness theorem? Yeah.
I see.
How did we? So let me just mention this F lost state is standing for Fleischack, Lewandowski, Okolov, Salman, and Thiemann. And it comes with a couple of things, conditions. And so one thing which you want is spatially diffeomorphism invariant vacuum, which is still satisfied, a cyclic vacuum, which is still satisfied, an irreducible representation, which is also still satisfied. We have also a representation of spatial diffeomorphisms. however, I actually learned that there's some hidden assumption here, which is not satisfied, which is one weakly continuous exponentiated fluxes, which actually is not satisfied. so given these things, the Arshtick-Lewandowski representation is unique. There's another thing which we change, which is I think was also quite important to make it actually working. And that is that we change from representing all kinds of fluxes and associated to arbitrary surfaces, which can even cut each other and so on, and where the algebra is not even known for Arshtick-Lewandowski, to simplicial fluxes, which are really sitting on triangles in an arbitrarily refined triangulation. And the holonomies are in the dual of these triangulations. So this, to introduce this structure was, I think, was very important to make it kind of consistent. Let me just say, I didn't really explain to you how it works, but let me just say that the way we made it work generalizes to other topological quantum field series, which you can use as vacua, and then you can basically construct out of these TQFTs vacua plus excitations. And so always the non-trivial part is actually to figure out what are the excitations. And these are basically objects which are stable under this notion of refining with this vacuum state. And in general, this will be basically the non-local, the non-trivial task to figure these excitations out, which really tells you actually what is this Hilbert space, because the Hilbert space is just a representation for these excitations. Let me just finish with conclusion and outlook, because I'm already over time. So actually, I didn't talk about that. That was just the last slide. There's basically this main idea which we used here for this for defining the BF refining was to use the time evolution defined by BF theory as a refining operation. And the proposal is that one can also use that to actually construct physical states and the physical vacuum and spin forms. And it's nice that it works for BF. And I think it opens up lots of new avenues for further developments. It's actually very near to spin form dynamics. And one can, for instance, discuss simplicity constraints in the dynamics, which Zapata has done a while ago, since it actually is based on the opposite states, which give you non-degenerate geometries. It might facilitate extraction of low energy physics, cosmology, etc. And one could think of many generalization. And one question I'm interested in is, for instance, does it allow a Hilbert space supporting SL2C? Because that's not possible for Arshtika Lewandowski. Okay. This one.
Do you have reason to believe that it will allow SL2C? Or are you just asking that it's an open question?
It's an open question. I know that, I mean, there's a reason why it doesn't work in Arshtika Lewandowski. And this reason does not exist in this form for SL2, for in the BF representation. So I don't know. I mean, I think you are not really asking about an expectation value of the metric. You mean the expectation value in a metric in a certain state or in the ground state? Yeah, you should check. So basically, it's completely, so the fluxes are maximally uncertain. So the expectation value should give you. That might be around zero, but I should, one should check. It's basically, even in BF, one typically doesn't do that, but I think somebody, I think Jimmy and Etera at some point defined expectation values of B, but I have to check this paper of B operators and Ponzano-Reggi, I think. So both operators are then, so both, holonomies are represented, basically. And the fluxes.
So they continue to be both well represented in finite operators?
As finite operators, but the fluxes are, you have to exponentiate the fluxes.
unbounded after this.
As finite, the fluxes are now.
Before you explain.
So finite. So the fluxes. So both are actually now exponentiated. So both are unitary.
Maybe you should say what you mean by that.
Yeah, both are bound because you exponentiate the fluxes.
Maybe you should explain what you mean by exponential.
Yeah, so. So basically, you take a surface, you integrate B over that. You have to parallel transport it, which I don't want to write explicitly here. And you exponentiate it so that, in principle, it becomes a hoop element.
Yeah, but still, I mean, from the general kind of complete perspective,
mm-hmm.
So
Hamiltonian, there's some related, I mean, basically the Hamiltonian now is more based on a triangulation. So it's basically everything is dual to what Thomas did. There's an issue which is to reconcile these exponentiated fluxes with the Hamiltonian. What we have so far looked at is that we can represent the diffeomorphism constraints in 2 plus 1. So the spatial diffeomorphism constraints in 2 plus 1. And for the Hamiltonian, so basically, it's basically, you know, you would have to take also a limit here for the exponentiated fluxes to get the fluxes. But for the diffeomorphism constraints, it's exactly what you need to get the vertex translations.
Okay, last question. Yeah. I had questions similar to several ones, but let me focus mm-hmm. on these questions. So is there some sense in this, which this ground state represents some well-defined 3 geometry or approximate 3 geometry? And if so, is it flat? Or what can you say anything about that?
So it's if you use SA2 in 2 plus 1 or in 3 plus 1, the ground state is basically defined by the same thing as given by BF transition amplitudes. So that means that F equal to 0 is strongly imposed.
So does that mean a flat metric? Or is it not that simple?
It's not that simple because it's the Arshtika-Lewandowski connection in general. So it means flatness for this Arshtika-Lewandowski connection.
Zero curvature.
Zero Arshtika-Lewandowski curvature.
Is there something that connects with that to, you know, kind of geometric dynamic notions or geometrical notions, like a 3 metric?
Yeah, I mean, in 3 plus 1, okay, it's a bit more complicated because it's not a simple 3 metric. But, and it's not just.
Approximate metric.
It's also not just the 3, it's also not just the 3 curvature, but it's also not just the 4 curvature, because it's the curvature of this connect of the Arshtika-Lewandowski connection. But in 2 plus 1, it would be just the curvature, the space-time curvature. So in 2 plus 1, it basically means it gives you actually the physical state for quantum gravity, because BF gives you the physical state of quantum gravity.
So it's Minkowski space, 2 plus 1 Minkowski space in that case.
Yeah, with some subtleties which come from orientations and these things, and having everything represented in the connection representation, basically.
Okay, I think we have to leave it there. So let's thank Jack again.